From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Noel.
Our colleague Matt is on adventures but will be returning soon. They call me Ben. We are joined as always with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the most wonderful time of the year. We've made it, fellow conspiracy realists, through trial and tribulation to another October. As you know, Halloween's our favorite holiday. So we thought, what better way to celebrate than to kick off this month with an episode on monsters. Not just one, but two episodes. This may not be the sort of exploration you were expecting, and it's taking us across the planet from ancient times to the modern day. I never thought we'd have to say it, Noel, but this might be familiar to some of our fellow listeners who play Fortnite, at least part of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Please don't rag on us too hard. We did our best. The metaverse is a very interesting place, rife with, kids that are mean to you. But no, it was super fun. This is actually an expanded version of what we did there. We sort of just hit the high points, and this episode is actually going to be some extra stuff for even folks that did manage to catch that that metaverse exclusive piece of content.
So without further ado, here are the facts. Now, this is something, Noel, that you and I have talked about at times in another show we do, Ridiculous History. For a lot of human history, for the span of human civilization, belief in what we would call monsters was not controversial. It was an accepted part of existence. You know, these days, things like vampires and, you know, zombies or evil spirits are consigned to myth and legend and rumor. But once upon a time, they were considered very real, genuine environmental threats. Like, you were really warning people not to go in the woods.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, in certain cultures and religions, they sort of take on more of the feeling of allegory or myth or sort of cautionary tale. But you're absolutely right. There are definitely cultures that still to this day, to some degree, treat them with the same urgency as you might, you know, like you said, Ben, like a wild animal attack or something like that, you know, or they're the idea of some sort of dangerous human stalking the night. The power of belief remains very, very strong in certain parts of the world. And I think you probably wouldn't be too hard pressed to find a person in America that to some degree believes in supernatural forces, whether they call them monsters or whether they call them, you know, hauntings or specters of some kind. I think that belief still certainly exists.
Mm-hmm. So in the first part of this two-part series, we're going to look at some examples of this. We're going to ask for your help at the end, because again, there are examples of plenty, so much so that we are making this a two-part episode. Look, when we're exploring the lives of people and communities in the past, we always want to take pains to say those beliefs do not in any way indicate these people or the communities in which they lived were foolish at all. Instead, again, they were working with the information they had. So there would be diseases you couldn't explain, maladies, strange atmospheric phenomenon. And so people would approach this through their own cultural framework, and they were just as intelligent as people today. So they wanted to explain things, to recognize patterns. A curse could also be another explanation. And these entities weren't always sinister. I mean, there are a lot of helpful supernatural spirits in folklore. And if you're a student of anthropology or folklore history, none of this is particularly surprising. But there is one thing that might startle a lot of us listening today. Today, 2022, October, all across the planet, there are not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but millions upon millions of people who believe at least some of those monsters of old, those creatures, curses, spirits, and ghouls, anything that goes bump in the night, some people still believe they're real. Here's where it gets crazy. So, like you said, Noel, we've talked about genuine beliefs in monsters and curses and even more modern legends that a lot of the rest of the world might dismiss. One of the things that I think always amazes outsiders happens in Iceland. And full disclosure, our pal Mission Control has traveled to Iceland, I think not once, but twice. And I had asked him off air a long time ago whether he encountered this, but believe it or not, there is a strong contingent of people in Iceland who believe in something very much like elves.
Yeah, there's a movie that came out maybe last Halloween. I think it's just called Elves, and it's basically like an Icelandic Gremlins movie. They're mischievous little bastards in this. And I think it's no spoilers. It's not a particularly great movie, but there is sort of like the precocious kids go out of the woods and discover like a tiny cute elfling. And then of course, by the fact that they have taken it, you know, into shelter, the bigger, meaner, scarier elves come after it. But yeah, no, it's very much true. And this is a belief also that kind of ties into, I believe it was Icelandic. We did this on Ridiculous History too, about like the Yule lads. Remember the Yule mm-hmm. lads, like spoon licker and candle sniffer,
yeah, like knee slapper,
humper, yeah. Whatever they were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, isn't that Icelandic as well?
The Yule lads are sort of the. Yeah, they occur in Iceland and a couple of other countries. The belief is like the gritty, disturbing origin story of Santa's helpers, kind of. They are the children of a demonic, monstrous figure. They are associated with mischief nowadays, but back in the day, they were associated with dangerous things like stealing children, you know? I love that you bring up the Yule lads because they have a lot in common with the Alfar or the elves, the hidden folk in Iceland. But yeah, this was this wasn't always just a story you told children to guide their behavior. People did believe in this stuff. And even now, I was surprised to find in 2017, National Geographic, did a piece on this belief, and they found that more than 50% of people in Iceland claim to have some degree of belief in elves. They're not super evil, and they're really closely associated with the bizarre and unique environment of the country. I mean, it's got lava fields. It feels to me like if you're looking at Iceland from afar, you immediately think, okay, I'm either freezing or I get on the wrong side of a volcano and I'm burning. So like, how do you explain if you're in early, if you're a person living in early Icelandic history, how do you explain all this weird stuff?
It's interesting too, because I mean, Iceland it's a good point that you make, it does tend to be a land of cultural extremes. I mean, you know, you've got the most gorgeous kind of like lilting, ambient music, like by the likes of Sigur Rós and Björk and stuff like that. And then you have this whole like Icelandic death metal movement that is just the absolute most extreme kind of harshest of music you can imagine. And I think the land and the landscape there and just the kind of isolation tends to kind of create those kinds of responses in folks that live there. It's also very isolated, very expensive to live there just by virtue of how disconnected from everything is. I mean, it just must be like people just getting absolutely reamed with import taxes and such.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were to ask most people in Iceland this question, or many people, if you were to say, do you believe in elves? You'll find that a lot of people sit on the fence. Some people think it's a little bit childish, but, you know, they'll also say, hey, we've got a rich folklore here. This is a big part of our culture. So a lot of people won't feel completely comfortable dismissing the idea out of hand. In general, it helps that these creatures are not seen as super aggressive, so long as you treat them with respect. Their one big sticking point is that they're very, very territorial, and that, right. And that means construction can be a problem.
I love this idea that, you know, I mean, yeah, they're Keebler elves, of course, that we know and love or whatever. Maybe we're terrified by when we were kids in America, the little spokes things of cookie fame. They live in trees, you know, with like doors in them and like little tree houses. Well, apparently in Iceland, large boulders are thought to be the homes of the elven kind, which could be a real problem. If you're clearing out, you know, fields of stone to make room for new developments, this kind of disruption could really rile up the elves. And there are certainly folks who believe that elves have kind of, you know, taken on sort of a Luddite role in smashing industrial equipment like bulldozers and making off with tools to slow down production.
Yeah. And elves also get blamed when machines break or just stop operating with no apparent explanation.
Mm-hmm. Gremlin type stuff, really. I mean, the gremlins in America, they were, I think, commonly kind of thought of as hijacking or sabotaging planes, you know, in the wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is sort of a elf sabotage operation here. It also goes to personal injury. Like a worker may sprain an ankle or break a leg, and at times the actions of elves were blamed rather than human error or, you know, taking a misstep. In older stories, it gets a little bit rougher. You could see livestock being afflicted with a disease or an infection, or even people falling ill or dying unexpectedly. However you find yourself on the skeptic/true believer spectrum, you'll see that a lot of people in Iceland still do seem to take this seriously. Now, whether that's part of just respecting an ancient culture or whether that's genuine fear of harm, whatever the case may be, you'll see that it's not crazy uncommon for people working construction or building a road to divert a road kind of in an arc around a big boulder instead of disturbing it or blasting through it.
Yeah, it's funny, man. And I think you have played Breath of the Wild to some degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the
yeah.
Switch.
Mm-hmm.
You know those little Korok guys that like give you the seeds mm-hmm. that allow you to expand your inventory?
Mm-hmm.
They always live underneath
boulders and like tree stumps and things like that. I think there's a little bit of elvishness about those guys too. And also, you know, gremlins, by the way, you know, are very much kind of an American creation during the World Wars and seem to really jump off of a lot of this folklore that you're talking about. And these ones, you know, are specifically, I don't even think you have to piss them off. I think that they're just inherently kind of, you know, chaos magic wielders.
Yeah. They're just agents of chaos. And in the case of elves in Iceland, lest we be casting aspersion upon their reputation here in the world of podcasting, it's important to note they're not all bad. As a matter of fact, I found one former member of Icelandic Parliament even swears that a family of elves saved his life when he was in a car accident. Now, is that just something you say during a campaign? Or is that something he truly believes? Story for another day.
Also, I mean, depending, I guess you're speaking to your base there, right? I mean, the fact right. that someone would even be comfortable enough to even say that out loud with a level of belief, that wouldn't go over super well with politicians in the United States, unless it's just like, you know, speaking to evangelical Christian kind of beliefs. But the idea of being, well, actually, what am I talking about? There's plenty of folks on that side of the aisle that would absolutely say they've spoken to angels or that they've, you know, had encounters, you know, of the third kind with things more out of scripture than superstition or folklore.
Yeah, there's a widespread belief system in the interventions of the divine and the infernal. It goes across, I would say, almost any imaginable political spectrum. But this, yeah, it's true. Like if you were ever thinking, wow, the people of some other country must be so silly to believe in these things that I think are malarkey, you got to remember you're in a glass house as well, because a lot of people in your country have beliefs in things that would be considered supernatural. I mean, for in the case of Iceland, there's even an elf school where you can take a day course that earns you a diploma in, I imagine, elfery. But with that, we've shown you one belief that is at least partially genuinely practiced by people in a country. So let's pause for a moment and we'll return with another even more popular supernatural belief.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Okay, here's one. We won't spend too much time on this one because we did an entire episode on it. The Jin. When I love your point earlier, Noel, about the idea of many people in the U.S. believing in angels and demons. Many people, especially of the Islamic faith, but not necessarily always Islamic, believe in the Jinn, the idea that the creator made angels, made human beings, and made a third intelligent life form called the Jinn, crafted out of smokeless green fire. It's nuts because I think, I don't know, growing up, until I started finding the right books in the library when I was about 7 or 8, all I knew about the Jinn was Western depictions, Robin Williams in Aladdin or Shazam. Shout out Mandela.
Which one even is it? No one knows. Actually, a quick cursory Google search will tell you that it was, in fact, Kazam, right?
Yes, it's Kazam. With Sinbad is another thing that is apparently not real.
That only exists in like our collective unconscious for some reason, right? There's actually, speaking of movies that do exist about Jinn, there is a new movie from George Miller, who did the Mad Max movies and, of course, like weirdly the Babe movies and the Happy Face movies. It is called 3,000 Years of Longing, and it stars Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba, and Idris Elba plays a Jinn. It's actually based on a short story called The Jinn in the Nightingale's Eye by A.S. Byatt. I have not seen it yet, but it looks pretty interesting and very elaborate, and obviously kind of got, a blank check to do whatever he wanted after that Mad Max Fury Road just, completely blew the doors off everything. So looking forward to checking it out. But yeah, Jinn are interesting. There's another good depiction, or a fun, silly depiction in the show, which I think you're also a fan of, Ben, What We Do in the Shadows. In the new season, one of the vampires finds a genie lamp or a Jinn lamp and rubs it and has this Jinn that appears to him. But the character is portrayed as more of like an accountant, kind of. So not a lot of like, fire and bluster and all this kind of stuff. He's just much more kind of like procedural about it, and very put upon by being in this guy's service and trying desperately to trick him into making dumb wishes, or to lose wishes.
Yeah, what Dungeons and Dragons would call lawful evil. There's always kind of this associated monkey's paw with the idea of wishes and Jinn in the Western framework, but if you delve into the actual folklore, like pre-Islamic and Islamic beliefs, you'll see it goes much deeper than that. And as much as I love Robin Williams riffing in Aladdin, it is not a super accurate definition. So check out our earlier episode on that. But before you check out that episode, let's talk about a monster many people have not have heard of. Oh, and also, side note, the Jinn are not inherently monstrous or evil. They're just different. We want to thank everybody who took the time to write to us with their own Jinn stories after hearing that episode all those years ago. If you have a Jinn story yourself, we would love to hear it. So please contact us with it. We'll tell you how to get in touch with us at the end of the show. But let's travel to South Africa. Riddle me this, Noel. Have you ever heard of this one, the Toko Loshe?
No, I have not. It's fun to say, though. I can already tell you that.
Right. This was unfamiliar to me. And I think a lot of the things we'll find over these two episodes are going to be unfamiliar to a lot of people in the West, like you and myself. So the Toko Loshe, also known as the Tiko Loshe, is this diminutive, like really short, hairy South African demon that apparently can function as a kind of hitman. You contact an evil practitioner of the spiritual arts, which might be called a witch doctor, And then they will build this thing to take revenge on your enemies. It's like it's a water sprite. It's tough to catch because it can be invisible. It renders itself invisible by drinking water or by swallowing a stone. And we actually, in our research, found maybe more of a mundane explanation for them that comes from Bantu folklore as a way of explaining why people seem to inexplicably die while sleeping at night.
Correct. That's because traditionally folks in this part of the world live in kind of stone yurts, I guess, like you might think of in a state park for, you know, glamping. Traditionally, folks there would sleep on the floor on these woven grass mats that would circle a wooden fire pit in the center of the yurt that would, of course, warm them during the very, very, very cold winter nights. In this terrain, this part of the country can get quite cold at night. So for a long time, folks didn't realize that the fire was, in fact, messing with the levels of oxygen and causing carbon monoxide. Think of it as like running a car in a garage, you know, or something like that, or just what can happen if a fire happens in your home. And that's why we have carbon monoxide detectors, because it literally does replace the breathable oxygen with carbon monoxide, and you can breathe that, and you won't really know the difference until you kind of, your body just shuts down. I mean, it's not exactly the same as like suffocating or drowning, because I think it's easier to not realize what's going on, right, Ben?
Yeah, exactly, because you are unconscious, so you may simply go to sleep and not wake up. It's a very scary thing, but it's also a very real thing. So again, people wanted to explain what was happening. Eventually, they realized that if you happen to fall asleep in an elevated position, you wouldn't be in danger from this curse or these attacks because, you know, as we know, as you explained, when you are prone on the ground, your head is in that air, that like layer of carbon monoxide. But when you're sleeping in, say, a sitting position of some sort, then you're still breathing oxygen. So this story came about saying that there was a short supernatural entity about yay high. I mean, we're an audio podcast right now, so just picture me pointing to my hip, about as high as an average person's hip. And it couldn't get you if your bed or your sleeping area was elevated high enough. There was, by the way, one silly, kind of silly, not safe for work detail that I had found, which was some rumors said that the Tokoloshe was pretty well endowed for its size. And one way it would take revenge on people is targeting their wives, and then the wife would become, or the spouse or significant other would become embroiled.
Damn.
In an adulterous relationship, and that would be the biggest revenge. But usually the idea was that the Tokoloshe would be set upon someone to kill them. And we're not Zulu Xhosa speakers, so forgive our pronunciation here, but we found some grisly details about how these creatures are created or summoned.
Yeah, and I will also say that a quick Google of Tokoloshe, there are quite a few what appear to be pretty B or C level movies.
Oh yeah,
about the Tokoloshe. Well, there's one from the '60s that's G rated and looks like a kind of like more of like a children's film. It looks pretty cute, but there's one called Tokoloshe: The Calling, and just you can tell by the cover alone that it's absolute trash. And then another one that's just called The Tokoloshe, and the tagline is "Where she goes, it follows." And then it's got like a little girl in a hallway and some spooky fingers reaching out, but it just looks like the worst kind of CGI I've ever seen. But yeah, you know, the whole well-endowed bit is interesting too. There's I'm sorry, I keep going into pop cultural rabbit holes, but I'm realizing so much of this stuff is fodder for like science fiction and like, you know, fantasy.
Sure. Horror as well.
Mm-hmm, horror as well, of course. There is it's not Miyazaki, but it's a Studio Ghibli movie called Pompoko, and it's about these kind
I watch that.
They're these like, what do you call it?
Tanuki.
Like shape-shifting tanukis, and they all have giant testicles. that they do not shy away from at all in the kids' animated movie. And I think they even use it as a superpower in some parts to kind of generate like a net, or they use it to like catch the wind, and they can like windsurf on their giant testicles. So I wonder if that's any commonalities between these two creatures. These guys also, now I'm getting caught back up in the elves, but the Tanuki in Pompoko, they also sabotaged construction sites.
Right, to protect their forest.
To protect their forest and their habitats. But yeah, some of these details about the summoning or, calling of the Tokoloshe are a little chilling. We've got someone kind of contacting a witch doctor, and that is a loaded term. We of course think of the Alvin and the Chipmunk song. I called the witch doctor and like ooh ee ooh ah ting tang walla walla bing bang, all very broad, borderline offensive caricatures of island kind of folks and this sort of idea of this sort of form of Santeria and all of that stuff, and very cartoonishly rendered. So let's just the term witch doctor in and of itself, I'm sure there's a better name, like in I believe like a bruja is one name for them, like in
a bokor.
Exactly, there's a ton of different ones, so witch doctor is in and of itself a little weird. But we are talking a little bit in general terms. So they are contacted, they are hired. Also, this idea of them being like inherently evil somehow plays into a lot of these depictions, which I don't know. I don't want to hire anybody evil. I'm just going to be a monkey's paw kind of scenario.
Well, yeah, sometimes, and there very much is one here, like sometimes, if you're thinking of a spiritual practitioner in this tradition, there'll be healers, right? People who banish evil spirits and bad vibes. And then on the other side, there will be more of a left-hand path, they would call it in some European magical belief systems. And that's very much the Sith Lord stuff. So yeah, not all of these practitioners are the same by any means. But in the stories, you reach out to this bad actor, spiritual practitioner, and you as the client are seeking revenge. You pay them maybe with money, maybe with some other things, right? Some other things of value. But the main thing you have to pay in the story is the promise of the soul of a loved one, with a very important caveat. You do not get to choose which loved one will be taken. The Tokoloshe itself decides when and how it will take that soul, and they decide who they're going to get.
Yeah, these are all, again, like these are very devil's bargain kind of situations where it's set up for you to fail. You go to one of these things like as a last resort because maybe you heard that they could like really do crazy stuff and they could get you your revenge, and you're so blinded by the need to enact whatever this revenge or to solve this problem might be that you don't think about the fact that this is ultimately going to come back on you. I mean, it really is like the ultimate kind of monkey's paw situation.
And it's pretty grisly, the creation process, according to the lore. This practitioner, once the deal is made and you have your covenant, will procure from somewhere a dead body, a dead human body, piercing the eye sockets and the brain with a hot iron rod. The logic here being this removes the ability of the human spirit to think for itself. Then they'll sprinkle the corpse with a magic powder that causes the thing to shrink. The Tokoloshe will then possess the body. It will enact revenge against the target, and you will never know when your part of the bargain comes due. The Tokoloshe may take its payment a few weeks later, or a few months later, or even years after the fact. It will take the soul of a loved one. So it's heavy stuff to mess with. I guess you really have to want that revenge, but it is something that is still reportedly believed in some communities in this part of the world. Although I should say, again, with many of these stories that we're talking about, a lot of these beliefs are kind of on the decline. They're sort of on their way out demographically. You'll see that a lot of younger folks don't really buy into these concepts, but a lot of older folks genuinely do still believe in them. And I'm saying that to set us up for our next one, which we talked about in our metaverse stuff, which is not so much an entity as it is an action, an intention, and the protection from that action or intention. It can be a little confusing to people, but you definitely heard of it before. Nazir, the evil eye.
That's right. It's interesting because, you know, if anyone's ever been to, say, like a Latin kind of market or, you know, even like an Asian market or like a bazaar, like in another country, if you're traveling, you are likely to see trinkets or amulets or rings or, you know, pendants or whatever depicting this like blue kind of crystalline, you know, flat circle with an eye drawn to the middle of it. And in fact, it is now an emoji. If you type in evil eye on your iPhone, you will get the exact image that I'm talking about. And there's another one that comes a little more from, I believe, Islam. That's sort of a hand with some fingers folded and like the eye kind of in the center of the hand. That one also comes up. And it is this concept of protecting yourself against someone who is looking upon you with a covetous nature. You know, maybe not necessarily cursing you or wishing you death or misfortune, but just the very act of like people, if you're in a position of success or prominence, you can elicit a lot of this kind of negative energy. And the evil eye or the Nazar is in fact a medallion or a, you know, a kind of an item that protects against that. So even though you'll sometimes hear the thing itself, the image, the icon referred to as the evil eye, it's actually a protective artifact or a protective symbol. It is not the the evil eye itself. It's just sort of a term that's sort of used to describe the thing by the thing that it protects against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what you'll see about this one, what I think is so fascinating about the idea of this curse is that it is so very widespread and very old. I believe the first documented evidence of the evil eye comes from Ugarit, an ancient city in modern day Syria. It was around until it was destroyed in 1250 BCE during the Bronze Age collapse. Check out our episode on that. So we know that this is even older. You'll find versions of it in Turkey and Greece and the Arab world, even in Japan. It occurs in some Jewish literature. It's in Italy. It's nuts. What we can learn from this is that people have been hating on each other and concerned about haters since before people learned to write things down.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a kind of part of the human condition is someone gets something, inevitably another person is going to look at it and want what that person has. And back in the day, you know, you might well get murdered for that thing, you know, have it taken from you, you know, right there on the street because there weren't, you know, systems in place to protect people from stuff like that. It really was kind of like the survival of the fittest. This image, though, specifically even with the blue pigmentation, goes back to ancient Egypt. The Eye of Horus is a symbol that we all may be well familiar with. It's got this kind of eye with like a really dope kind of like brow thing protruding from the top. And then this like awesome little kind of curly Q kind of golden ratio thing popping off the bottom. And that was buried with pharaohs to protect them in the afterlife. And then we even have, there's a really great article on BBC.com about the history of this thing by a guy named Quinn Hargitay. And he goes through kind of the history of the thing. And the thing that's so fascinating is it's like parallel thinking across these cultures that you're talking about. It's not like one necessarily borrowed it from another. It just sort of kind of seemed to pop up, you know, separated by oceans and, you know, in the similar way that there are certain gods in different pantheons that kind of mimic each other's functions because, you know, everyone needs to grow crops. Everyone needs to survive. Everyone needs to be fertile or whatever. So it makes sense there would be a stand-in deity with similar abilities, you know, even if, you know, folks had never heard of Horus or heard of, you know, Zeus or Hephaestus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's understandable because people tend to have the same concerns. The fancy word for what the evil eye as a protective sigil is apotropaic magic, protective magic, the type of stuff that's meant to turn away harm or evil influences. And it also makes sense that people are speaking through their cultural framework to their you know, really common experiences. Everybody has the same hardware. You communicate a lot with your eyes, you know. So, of course, people would be preoccupied with things like hands, things like eyes. You know what I mean? There's way less emphasis on things you don't think about as much, like the elbow. Also, you know, of course, known in scientific circles as the weenus.
Super scientific term. No one's ever going to question that or has ever questioned it. The thing that's so interesting, too, is I'd forgotten about this. The blue pigment or the blue color, I think, may date back to the Greeks. The idea that those with blue eyes were better at transmitting these curses.
Yeah.
Because it was a rarer eye pigment at the time and in that part of the world.
Yeah, and blue eyes in general, as we recognize them today, come from like an ancient mutation in Estonia or something. It's fascinating. I think green eyes were there too, but they were sort of the Pepsi to the Coke. Blue eyes were the way to go. And, you know, you shouldn't be surprised if you see stuff like this, like you were describing, Noel, if you see stuff like this in the modern day. And I remember we were talking about this previously, one of the folks we're working with was asking us how we would rock this charm. And my idea was that if I was convinced I needed some apotropaic magic and I needed an evil eye, then it would be like my first tattoo, one big evil eye on the chest, and then my second tattoo, another one on the back.
Bring just up the to, rear.
Cover the bases.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is a fascinating subject just because of a lot of the, you know, the way we see it kind of spreading throughout cultures. Plutarch, who was a very, you know, learned man in ancient Greek culture, was a philosopher and, you know, a historian as well, I mean, to a degree. He wrote the Symposiacs, in which he, you know, would espouse kind of the best equivalent of science that they could kind of muster at the time. And one of them was the one that makes sense. We talked about this at the thing that we did. The idea that the eyes are such an important part of the human body, both functionally, but also spiritually. You know, they say things like the eyes are the window to the soul. And if you can look in a window, can't you also put stuff out of a window? And the idea that the eyes are where these evil kind of energies can be transmitted. Plutarch literally believed that they were like invisible rays, like of energy that could, if made potent enough or harnessed correctly, actually, this is coming from this article in BBC, kill children or small animals.
Yeah. Basically, Plutarch argued that some people were like Cyclops from the X-Men. And they had laser eyes.
Yeah, or Superman, you know? Dangerous. I mean, it's a trope we see in superpowers or demons or, you know, folks with kind of otherworldly abilities to be able to shoot fire or lasers out of your eyes, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's important to say Plutarch was not alone in this. Of course, Plato, Pliny the Elder, many, many people believed in this and continue to do so today. So if you see somebody doing that, then don't give them a hard time. Respect their beliefs. And honestly, I'm always of the mind that if someone is doing something that they see as a protective measure and it's not hurting you or impacting you in any way, then, you know, don't yuck their yum. If it's important to them, be respectful.
I do think it's funny, too, how something like a pentagram or a pentacle, you know, is meant to be a protective sigil, but is often incorrectly associated with like devil worship, or it's seen as the opposite, as though it's trying to cast a spell to hurt somebody or represent the malice, the malicious kind of intent that the evil eye might. But what it actually is meant to do is to protect you from these kind of negative, you know, energies.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the evil eye hand sign. You'll have to check that out if we're on YouTube for this part. You know, Noel, I think at this point, we've talked about some things that could be genuinely frightening for people. And we've talked about ancient practices in the modern day. But what if we end today's episode by taking a little break to toss some evil eye protections up and looking into a more modern thing that goes bump in the night?
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And we have returned. Okay, so what if one thing that went bump in the night wasn't a creature at all? As strange as it may sound, for a pretty significant number of years, a lot of people in parts of Asia were convinced that standing fans were a one-way ticket to an early grave. You might recognize this urban legend as something called fan death. And the idea is that if you leave an electric fan on, running in your home at night or running in your room, and you don't have a door open or a window cracked, then you will die. And we talked about this previously, actually checked off air to see if our pal Mission Control had heard of it. And Paul, you confirmed that you had. What might surprise people is this belief was prevalent in the early 2000s, which wasn't too long ago. I mean, you know, 20 years ago now, but not too long ago. It really got a lot of attention in South Korea, as well as parts of Japan. And we talked a bit about why people thought this would be dangerous. To be clear, they didn't think it was demonic possession. They didn't think, you know, it was some sort of curse. They thought there was a scientific explanation for why leaving a fan on at night would kill you.
Yeah, it's weird, man. There's a couple. My favorite one is slicing the molecules,
chopping
of
the
air.
Oxygen molecules.
Yeah, chopping them up, making them too small to be functional. I guess I don't know, but no, it is. I think perhaps a combination of sort of like new technology, or maybe not new technology, but like there's sort of like a fear of change, you know, in a part of the country where things I think maybe were had been typically a little more analog in terms of this kind of stuff. Although it is funny that, you know, you don't hear about this fear associated with ceiling fans as much. It's specifically these like portable plug-in standing fans. And when you first brought this topic up and I hear standing fans, I'm immediately thinking of like, are those like standing stones? Are these some sort of like weird marker of druidic ritual, or what are we talking here? But no, we're literally talking about like a tripod kind of like caged fan.
Yeah, and I agree the role of new technology had to play a, a sociological part here. Let's talk through some of the other theories. One concern was found in hypothermia. So long story short, if you're a human being, when you go to sleep, your metabolism naturally slows down a bit. So people would argue that because the air blowing on a sleeping person could ostensibly cool them a little, that combined with a slower metabolism could lower your body temperature to the point that your organs fail. Before we do a little myth busting with that one, the next one is carbon dioxide poisoning, right? Similar to what was actually happening with people in South Africa. The idea here was that the fan emits these chemicals while the motor runs in a closed room, and it's the carbon slowly asphyxiates anybody asleep there. So those are the big explanations. I also think the one about a fan mutilating oxygen molecules is the most interesting, because we live in a southern part of the United States where it gets very hot, and I've never had a standing fan that effective, you know? So if there was one, I would buy it, is what I'm saying. This urban legend, like, it's strange, the first reports date back to the 1920s, but they don't really take off till the 70s. And there may have even been a little bit of a conspiracy afoot, which we'll get to at the end. But we know that people were so concerned, whether or not you agree with this idea, people were so concerned that a government agency, the Korea Consumer Protection Board, issued a safety alert about it in 2006. And they said, if you're exposed to fans or air conditioners for too long, you will lose water. You'll begin to have hypothermia. You could die from this carbon dioxide saturation. And it claimed that from 2003 to 2005, at least 20 people died as a result of this. But there's more to this story. I mean, we have to first off say, again, living in the South, we know this all too well. An electric fan doesn't really chill the air. It just moves it around. That's why if you've ever had a job in like a hot kitchen or a warehouse, or you've just been in a place without AC, you eventually notice the fan is just kind of making a breeze. But if the air is still really hot, that breeze is going to be hot too. It doesn't do that much. Also, hypothermia, if you look at the temperature that's required for organ failure to come in, there's no way that a fan is going to get your body to that level. You have to drop, your internal temperature has to drop it below 86 degrees Fahrenheit or 30 degrees Celsius. And I think the main thing, one thing that stuck with all of us, Matt as well, from a production standpoint, is most homes are not airtight. Like, across the world, they're not. Certainly not enough to cause suffocation. Can you imagine how expensive it is to build just one room like that, let alone an entire house? What kind of doors do you have? Do you have to have an airlock at that point?
Right. I mean, we know, you know, I mean, how difficult it is just from like doing stuff in studios to, you know, seal a room so that sound doesn't escape, and sound travels on air. So in order for a room to be completely like hermetically sealed like that would not come with just like standard, you know, construction, especially maybe in a part of the country where things are even less tightly sealed to a degree. Like certain homes in maybe more rural parts of Asian countries might have more traditional kind of like old school features, like, you know, wood, more wood design, or like wood paneling, or perhaps rice paper for windows and panels and things like that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the only fans that I've ever been really, really concerned about have been the like old industrial style steel blade fans, if they don't have that wire cover. And then I'll be honest, you know, they have a paranoid dude, janky ceiling fans. That, like, that's a pit in the pendulum kind of thing. When you, as a matter of fact, let me look and make sure mine's off. You know, everybody's seen those in a house, the ones that kind of swing on their own little rhythm and vibe, and you have to wonder how long it is before they decide to take off for the ground. The good news is, nowadays, most people don't believe this myth, but for some, it remains a better safe than sorry situation. You could say, look, I'm not a crazy paranoid person, but just in case, let me leave the door ajar. And this is where we get to the conspiracy, where I think we end our episode today. We found in our research that there are some pretty, I won't say airtight, there's some pretty compelling theories that the government of South Korea, at least, may have helped spread the myth a little bit as a way of combating skyrocketing energy use during the very hot, humid summers in that country, in that part of the world. So there we have it. There's no proof of anyone actually experiencing fan death, but it's easy to understand why some people decided to play it safe and maybe to this day won't trust a fan at night. And Noel, here we have to call it a day. We'll be back in just a few with part two of this, but we're going to have even more modern, weird examples. We had one that Matt's really into called the Ahul. No spoilers. Ahul. Yeah, that's a fun one. The night dancers, of course, we've got to go to the Philippines with the Aswang and of course the white lady. But in the meantime, you know what I think we should do? I think we should ask our fellow conspiracy realists if there are any genuine beliefs in monsters in their neck of the global woods.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear what some of the myths and stories around where you live might be, or if in fact there are ones that people genuinely steer clear of certain parts of the woods to avoid because they think there's some truth to them. Let us know. You can reach out to us via social media where we are Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, where we also have a Facebook group called Here's Where It Gets Crazy. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. And hey, while you're on the internet, why don't you go and reserve yourself a copy, pre-order a copy of our book, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, the book, available soon, October 11th, in fact, any day now.
Mm-hmm. It might be out as this episode comes out, as a matter of fact. But either way, yes, get thee to your favorite bookstore or platform of choice. We can't wait to hear your thoughts. You can also call us directly. We have a phone number. That's right. Say it with me. 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a familiar voice. You'll hear a beep like so. Beep. And then you'll have 3 minutes. They're yours. Go nuts. Give yourself a cool nickname, an appellation, a moniker, an AKA. We love them. Tell us what's on your mind. Let us know if we can use your name and or voice on the air. And most importantly, don't edit yourself. If you have a story that needs more than 3 minutes, we want to hear it. We want those links. We want those photographs. We read every single email we get. All you have to do is drop us a line where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.